We told you some weeks ago about our own Rachel Lippmann's European visit as part of a German-American fellowship exchange program sponsored by a professional journalist organization in Berlin. Rachel told us about her visit to Germany in order to learn more about it and about how journalism is practiced there. It was a two-way exchange, and last month a German radio reporter visited St. Louis as part of that program. Sabina Adler is a correspondent for German radio, and I sat down with her and Rachel and asked Rachel to tell us about the program that brought them together.
It is part of the RIAS Berlin Commission. RIAS is the old radio in the American sector. It was during the Cold War, put sort of American and Western-based journalism into the Eastern sector of Berlin. And now they're focused on kind of, building connections between Europe and American journalists. So we got there and we went and got a chance to learn kind of how Germany is working politically post-reunification, how the things are going with the immigrant crisis, and just sort of really be exposed to German government, to the European Union government, to German culture. And then they bring, on the flip side, the RTNDA working here works in partnership with the RIAS Berlin Commission to bring German journalists over to the United States for a three-week stay. In addition to them sort of going to government centers, government and financial centers, they get to come spend a week in American newsrooms and do some reporting on their own. And that's what brings Sabine Adler to St. Louis Public Radio.
Tell me where you've been so far, Sabina.
The first week we spent in Washington, D.C. We had some discussions and meetings. And in St. Louis, I'm since Monday. And I wanted to do some stories. For example, the first thing what attracted my attention was the vandalism on the Jewish cemetery. Because this was a thing, and the bomb threats, this was a thing what I was asking myself, is this a sign for the polarization in the country, for the increase of hate speech, and is this a step further in this direction? And I organized some interviews, and I did these interviews, and it was really surprising. And I tried to find out in every place I am, what was the most moving, interesting story for our colleagues in this place. And I asked, of course, also Rachel on Monday afternoon or night, what was the most intensive story? And she answered, Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be honest, I've never connected Ferguson to St. Louis.
Did you draw any conclusions? We'll come to Ferguson in a moment. Any conclusions about the desecration at the cemetery or that atmosphere that caused it?
Everybody was very cautious to comment this. Yes, it is 100% the outcome of the election and the polarization of our country. No, the people were more cautious. But, of course, everybody thought in this direction.
Sure. Rachel, the cemetery story was a big one, but nothing like Ferguson. But you looked like you were starting to say something.
No, and what I was going to add is that what Sabine is saying about some of the official voices that she talked to, I believe you talked to the head of the Jewish Federation here and the executive director of the cemetery. When this first happened in November, or excuse me, in February, it was they have been very cautious since that moment. If you spoke to people who were at the cemetery checking to make sure that their parents, or grandparents, or families' graves were okay, they were much more willing to make that leap there. Officially, I can understand why they're not doing it, but the connection in the broader Jewish community is definitely being made between what happened in November with the election and sort of this rise in anti-Semitic acts, apparently, which were not necessarily committed by someone in the United States, but it's still creating a general climate.
Sabina, is this a story that is of interest back home? I mean, obviously, one associates the German history with things like this. So is there an audience for that and an interest in this kind of thing?
Yes, sure. Because we carefully watch what happened in terms of anti-Semitism. And this is obviously a topic here. And we think that this is more a topic for Germany and for supremacy, and we don't connect, or we didn't connect it until now with the United States. It's more, think of Europe, Eastern Europe, I must say, also. And yeah, and of course, everything with anti-Semitism is a topic.
I lived in Germany for a period of time, and the young people I knew who were born after World War II were getting really tired of hearing about those things that happened during World War II, saying, we didn't do it, it was our parents and our grandparents. I wonder if an attitude like that still exists.
No, I wouldn't agree, because, for example, my niece, she's very interested in this stuff, and she's around 30. And, you know, I think it depends always on the way you tell the history. And if you only talk about millions or thousands or hundreds of thousands of deaths, then it's... These are just figures. But if you personalize these stories, give them face and family story, then, of course, the people are touched. And until now, and we are aware that the eyewitnesses, the survivors only live, I don't know, a few years, and then there aren't many left. And we actively use these eyewitnesses to learn more about this. I wouldn't say, and I wouldn't agree, that we are tired from this.
What are your impressions of Ferguson now, having been there a couple of times? What impression will you take back with you?
The first impression is perhaps the most strongest. I expected a surrounding, a quarter of this city, very shattered. And what I saw, nothing was shattered, especially this place where Michael Brown was murdered. Mm-hmm. And it was surprising for me. It was quite pretty street, and nothing wrong with this surrounding, and that surprised me. What I found out within the interviews, I did a lot of interviews there, and what I found out, that the division of the population, of the inhabitants, isn't over. People aren't closer after these events. I imagined that sometimes something horrible brings people together. And I couldn't find this.
Could not find them coming together?
No. I ask each of my interview partners.
Black and white?
Black and white. And everybody said, yes, we try. And there are some initiatives, some organizations, and... yes, we learned some lessons. For example, the most horrifying thing I think is to raise money for the budget with traffic tickets. It's awful. It's awful, and it's uncivilized. And you know, I would this believe from Russia, where I used to be a correspondent. Mm-hmm. This is so uncultured. And to fulfill a budget in such a way, I find it very disturbing. And they learned something about this. And as a real German person, I would propose, why don't you raise taxes? Of course, I understand that's not the culture in America, but raise money for the budget by traffic tickets. It's crazy. Excuse me.
Does this match, Rachel? Does this match what you know and feel about Ferguson or the time you've spent there?
Yeah. And I mean, I think it goes back to there's still a fundamental divide between individuals who believe that Darren Wilson, the officer who shot and killed Mike Brown, was in the right, and those who believe that he did something wrong there. And if there's a fundamental disagreement over what the incident meant, whether it was an unjustified killing or he was out to get this officer and he needed to protect himself, if you can't come to an agreement on sort of the seminal issue that frames everything, I don't think you can really come together in any kind of broader way. And I don't know that there's ever going to be an agreement over what happened on Canfield Drive on August 9th, 2014. And I don't know that you can completely solve or bring the divides together, divides that were already there, with that sort of central fact still out there.
And probably not overnight, if ever.
If ever, no.
If ever. What, Sabina, do you recall what your friends were saying about Ferguson when it was happening 2 years ago?
You know, I remember the pictures, of course, of burning streets, burning gas station, burning shops. And I imagine it was a hell. And I was a little bit frightened to go there, to be honest. I didn't know whether this would be safe. And being there, that's like always, if you see it with your own eyes, is another story. But I would like to come back to the impression of the division of the city. What I found amazing was what one black guy said after the election, the presidential election. He is afraid that some people may be feel even more encouraged to show their racism or their hate towards black people, and this frightens me.
That the election was an enabling factor, yeah, enable people to really
empowering.
And there's no way. How will you report this story? You have not filed any reports yet, or have you?
I filed one report, but not from St. Louis, about the. If you want, I can tell you what I did. This was one story from Washington, D.C., our first station. We met several correspondents from the newspapers and also NPR, for example. And what I found amazing was one thing, that the access to members of the government is, in most of the cases, most of the ministers, impossible. And the colleagues are facing a very big challenge to report what's going on in government and to have any access to ministers. And the example was Tillerson, the Secretary of the State Department, and one colleague from the Washington Post, and Garen, explained that it's impossible to get an interview, of course, a statement. She can get a statement, but they as correspondents, can't discuss any issue with him.
Rachel, let me try this on you. I think that it's going to make for better journalism, this sort of thing. They're going to work harder, and I think, really be inspired to dig as deeply as they can into anything that's going on.
Some of the bigger scoops in history have not come from government officials. I guess how you define government officials. Deep Throat was obviously ended up being quite high up in the administration. But, you know, the Pentagon Papers came from a government employee, not a government official, and that's, you know, they became public documents. There's other public documents out there to do it. And I think if you have to rely more on unofficial or people sources, man on the street, whatever you want to call it, that was a critique we heard a lot after the election, is how the heck did you miss what was going on in Middle America? And I think a lot of it has to do with nobody came to Middle America. Right. They joke and call us flyover country, but... Yeah.
And now they're leaking like crazy in Washington.
They are leaking like crazy in Washington.
What impression are you going to bring back with you after this particular visit? What overriding impression?
You know, if I could choose a town, a city, a region, I would have chosen the flyover zone. Yeah. And when I
Here you are.
And that's why it's really amazing for me to watch. What I didn't expect is the vitality of the political discussion. I expected the more rural area, a more only pro-Trump thinking. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's not the case, and it is a very vital area and very interesting. And it's interesting for me to see that the flyover zone is not a dead zone in a political sense.
If you went a few miles to the west of where we are right now, you might find a lot more of that. I mean, the urban areas tend to be a little more progressive, a little more democratic in the sense of political affiliation.
Yeah, yeah. We're south, out on 55, too,
right.
Out on 70,
right.
Down 55.
And,
and let me mention one episode. I searched, of course, Trump supporters, and I found some. And I expected that there is no cliché. But what I met were, or whom I met were, so diverse. One guy was 70 years old, retired. He was befriended with his black neighbor. Mm. And the first thing he said to me was, I'm divorced, I'm gay, and I'm a Trump supporter. And this I want to report to Germany. We have the cliché that Trump supporters are only male, elderly persons,
white,
and conservative and Catholic, and I don't know, against abortion and so on. But I found a much more diverse type of Trump supporters.
This may be an unfair question, but if you were writing this story now, what would your lead be?
Look closer.
Look closer at America?
Yeah.
At America.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clichés don't help. Mm-hmm. It's not enough. To understand a country, you can't rely on clichés.
That's German radio correspondent Sabina Adler and our own Rachel Lippmann talking about the exchange program that sent Rachel to Europe last November and brought Sabina to this country. Sabina left St. Louis to conclude her fellowship visit in New York City. Arts and culture programming on St. Louis on the Air is funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council Estate Agency. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.